For centuries, Pacific Islanders have been sharing stories that connect us across the region. Stories from the Pacific is a weekly program that continues that tradition, bringing you deep and personal stories from a diverse range of people. Athletes, farmers, artists, teachers, activists, entrepreneurs, all united by their Pacific heritage and incredible journeys.
Listen to Stories from the Pacific on your favorite podcast app.
This is an ABC podcast. Resorts, homes, and a newly built hospital have been washed away.
I'm just holding on for dear life here. This isn't fun.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Plan this time before disaster strike.
Every natural disaster gets worse.
Save what for dream. You must ready.
Helping your community.
Helping your family.
Helping you.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Mbulo Binaka, I'm Josiah Nanunga, based in Fiji.
Hi, I'm Fred Hooper, based in Australia.
And this is Pacific Prepared. This show aims to interweave traditional knowledge and climate change, helping you to be ready for any disaster.
Through stories and Talanoa from the Pacifica.
On today's show, the Coral Coast finds new strength in unity and action.
And we'll get an update from Palau, where weather services and people talking about climate change and disaster risk reduction got together, put their minds together to try and come up with ideas across the Pacific.
That's all coming up. This is Pacific Prepared.
Disaster is part of our life, and recovering is also part of our life.
As you see, they're smiling despite the devastation. That's how we are.
You are listening to Pacific Prepare.
We know that a lot of journalists across the Pacific often travel for lots of different reasons, and recently our reporter based in Solomon Islands, Jeremy Guao, has travelled to Palau for the second Pacific Disaster Risk Management Ministries meeting in 2025. Joe, we're hoping to catch up with Jeremy now to see how that sort of all unfolded and what the outcomes of it were.
Absolutely, Fred, and we're always delighted to have Jeremy with us on the show. And yes, he has been to an island nation in the Pacific that's currently in my bucket list that I need to explore and visit and capture their Talanoa, their stories. And he was there, as you've stated during that attending and covering that particular meeting. And let's welcome him to the show this week. Jeremy Mbulo Binaka, and welcome to Pacific Prepared.
Hello, Joe. Hello, Fred. Ali from the...
Hi, Jeremy.
Ali from the pristine paradise of Palau. Yes, it was an amazing week last week. Of course, journalists have been here covering the event. It was sort of like 2 days event where we had ministers from across the Pacific. I think there's 7 ministers participating last week for the event. And it was a good discussion coming up from, you know, the second Pacific Disaster Risk Management Ministerial Meeting. Here in Palau, leading from the first one, which was in Nandi, where sort of all the dialogues have been taking forward for this year. And it was the first time after 33 years where we had this masterclass as well for journalists in the Pacific. Around 10 countries have been participating in this one. So, yeah, I was so fortunate to be part of this too. Yeah, Fred.
Yeah, I like, Jeremy, how you're still sort of saying... that, like, as if you're still in Palau. I think you're still there in mind, maybe, but you're not actually there still in body at the moment. You're back in Solomon Islands,
yeah,
as we understand
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
But, Jeremy, what was it like? What sort of things did you talk about when you're in Palau and all those sort of, I guess, parties coming together to try and come up with solutions for different aspects of climate change and disasters across the Pacific?
I think the biggest takeaway for me in Palau was the talk around preparedness, the highlight of that. How do Pacific Island countries prepare for, you know, disaster? You know, disaster is not something that it happens and then everyone get to prepare for it. We have to prepare ahead of it. Example, if there's a cyclone starting from Category 1, probably, you know, a country should have been prepared for that before it happened on Category 5 or something. That's sort of like a take from, you know, the big meeting. like this. And also there's sort of like highlights that the climate financing, especially when it comes, when we talk about disaster management risk and sort of, I think for us in Solomon Islands, we're so fortunate that last year we also launched the disaster risk finance. So we also have the platform leading from the meeting back in Nandi, the first ministerial meeting. So it's sort of like a takeaway for me, which is us in Solomon Islands, we're doing our best in order to, you know, achieve what's been on the table from Nandi and now in Palau here. And also one of the biggest takeaways to have seen the improve or also the progress of the humanitarian warehouse, which now Palau has been establishing the groundbreaking ceremony last week, which they also prepare for, you know, building the warehouse in terms of ready for any disaster. I think Kiribati is the first country to start with that, amongst the 14 countries, including Timor-Leste. And yeah, that's a big thing out of this meeting. And we're also hoping to see the Koro declaration, which is yet to come out as of now. Yeah.
So when you say the warehouse, this is the place where all the post disaster, the kit or the ration and other important kit to be used after disaster will be stored and to be on standby?
Yes. So basically the Pacific humanitarian warehouse project is implemented by SPC, but then, you know, it was, like I said, it covers 15 countries, 14 rather, including Timor-Leste, and it's sort of like a house where it covers, like, it looks after, you know, equipments in terms of relief, and also sort of like a preparedness thing for a country to get prepared or even intervene during disaster, instead of we asking, you know, partners around or kind of thing, but then we actually prepare for any disaster. So it's sort of, if you establish a warehouse, it indicates that, like for us in Solomon Islands, we also have a national warehouse, but then it also has like a thing that whenever a disaster comes, we just go to the emergency alert and then warehouse can be activated, sort out for all the partners around so they can tip in whatever help they can be, you know. So the warehouse is very important for Pacific Islands, hence that also we in the, you know, disaster we experience every now and then. So it's very important, yeah. So at the moment it's only 14 countries that are part of the partnership for the warehouse, yeah. And there's only one that has been already have the warehouse. One second is Palau. Last week they do like a groundbreaking establishment for land. I think the issue now to have the other 7 countries to allocate land for their warehouse. So for us in Solomon Islands, I think we already allocate a place in Malaita province. So it's a good thing that we actually progress in this, you know, sort of like Pacific talks around this humanitarian partnership. Yeah.
Yeah, it's such an interesting idea and concept for sure. Hey, Jeremy, did you actually get to go to the warehouse? Did you see it at all?
I was so fortunate to be part of the groundbreaking in Palau for the warehouse, which the place that I actually put. It was located up in the hill in Arerai in Palau, sort of like a state apart from the Koro, which the event was held. So yeah, it's a great event. It's a big event, especially for Palau, country like Palau, like small state islands who are, you know, very prone to, like, for example, the typhoon that was just gone past Palau last week. So looking at the location, it was a really good location, uphill, next to their Met Service area, next to the airport, and it's sort of like a hill, so it's a safe space for them to have, like, the warehouse there.
I've just realized that, yeah, you said groundbreaking event, which literally means breaking the ground, right? So it's not actually built yet. So, of course, you didn't see the warehouse.
So they're hoping to roll out, hoping to roll out the progress of the, you know, building and sort of anytime as of this year leading up to next year.
And, you know, apart from the work and the tight schedule the team had while in Palau, I was also fascinated to see that He also did some time out, going out, doing some sightseeing and getting to experience and taste Palau, the traditional way of life and the beauty of the environment. And actually, I'm currently right next to the beach right now, and I'm like thinking, is my location similar to that off in Palau? But nevertheless, Jeremy, after seeing the photos and videos on social media, one thing that captured my attention was one thing that caught my attention rather was how communications personnel and reporters were able to learn the skills or the art of simplifying concrete and complex scientific information in a simple manner. What can you tell us about that?
I think the first ever masterclass for us Pacific journalists coming together last week was very important, hence that, you know, climate or disaster or sort of like a preparedness is one of the least prioritized topic every time if you were in a newsroom. That's sort of like going down, you know, we got a politics going up and sort of, but then coming together last week, it gives us like, how do we tailor stories like disaster preparedness and sort of scientific jargons? How do we make it more easy and simple for a primary school student to understand it and makes it more spicy so that, you know, can, you know, it can also sit on the front page and stuff, rather than having, you know, politics and sort of. So last week, it gives us a, you know, a clear pathway on how to report on preparedness, disaster, and also, yeah, mitigations around, you know, disaster and stuff, yeah.
Jeremy, what's the sort of the one thing that you will, I guess, take away from your week in Palau? And I guess I'm talking more about the discussions around climate change and disasters that were had with all of the groups that came together, I guess the interested parties and those stakeholders. What's the kind of one thing that you will take away and remember about that week?
I think my takeaway is the meetings, dishes team is strengthening political leadership for disaster risk management in the Pacific. It says it all, like from, you know, looking at the discussion, listening to them last week, it gives a broader perspective of having, you know, leaders accountable for preparedness, humanitarian partnership in the Pacific. They've seen the challenges that people or local citizens have been affected by, you know, not just now, but then previously from previous, you know, disasters and stuff. They've obliged to put, you know, policies on the table to, you know, see what's good for the people going forward in terms of preparedness or being resilient about, you know, disaster or whenever any disaster occurs. So I think I would quote from last year's, last week's, what the Prime Minister for Palau have mentioned, that it's not just a gathering, but it's something that we are strengthening the foundation to secure a united and a stable Pacific region when it comes to disaster or preparedness. So that's sort of like my takeaway for last week, yeah, during the event, yeah.
I've learned a lot from very relevant and timely information and insights that you've shared, Jeremy, from your recent trip in Palau. And I understand that it's always important and critical to sit together and share knowledge with other communication professionals or reporters from right across the Pacific. And we trust that you've learned a lot and learned something that you'll continue to share as we set sail, as we continue our journey right here on the next few episodes on Pacific Prepared. Jeremy Guo, thank you so much. Thank you, Thomas, for your time and for joining us this week.
Thank you, Thomas, Fred, thank you, Joe. Like in Palau, they said, Mesulang.
We need to be prepared for the future.
Helping you stay safe.
We have built a seawall 2 times, but it did no good.
What happens when something goes wrong and how do they respond to it?
Plan this time before disaster strike.
Every natural disaster gets worse.
Pacific Prepared.
Pacific Prepared.
Pacific Prepared.
There's always something powerful about watching a place slowly returning to life or at its original state, I would say, seeing the land, the forest, and of course, the ocean begin to heal after years of change. It's not something that happens overnight, and it is not something that happens by chance, Fred.
Yeah, Joe, and often it feels like that all begins right at the local level with people who have lived through the changes and have seen their surroundings transform over time. They know what the place used to look like, they know how the rivers once flowed, and they also know how the oceans once provided.
Indeed, Fred. And when someone speaks to them, they will obviously be a mix of sadness and determination at the same time, a deep desire to bring these things back, even if it takes years.
That's the kind of reflection we'll hear in today's Talanoa. It's a reminder that environmental change isn't just about data and science. It's about people, really, identity and responsibility. Because when the environment suffers, the community also feels that. And when the environment recovers, it's like the entire Vanua breathes again.
In our interview today, we'll hear from a traditional leader who's helping to guide that process. He's someone who's seen decades of change and the shifts in community life, the pressures on the environment, and the renewed energy to bring balance back to the land and sea. Here's our Talanoa with the chief known as Chui Ndabuchukia, Ratukini Biliame Ravono Loa Mboruabato.
Vinaka, I wish to say a big vinaka wakalevu to this platform so that we can share our thoughts and ideas and also exchange lessons learned within the Pacific and also the global. Here in the Coral Coast, it's a very unique area, and also attracting with tourism, and we have smiling faces, and also the environment do smile for you, and from years in the 1800s and then to the 1900s, we can tell you that we have seen the changes that are occurring in our environment. And not only in our environment, it also challenges the leadership, governance within the villages and the clan and the tribe. So I wish to note some of the challenges that we've been facing all along. One is the overgrowth of algae and overfishing and boats been throwing anchor illegally, and pollution waste from the village itself and also from tourism operators or industries that we have along the coast. And to tell you that it has really changed the ecosystem itself within our oceans, and for the forest, and it also has a big change to us, and with the rivers, it also has provided a change. That's dealing with development through logging. That's been a root cause, spearing all the areas that we are in. Eh? So with that, the Wanoa itself, and also the we do have a committee that tend to be working on these areas. So we sat with USP during that time with some other NGOs and the ongoing partners that here we are working with. And then we tend to establish or develop a plan for conservation and management. From there, there were committees being developed or formulated from the four villages, including Namhanda, Tangange, Votualalai and Votua. And we do also have a working team that has been doing monitoring itself to identify the changes. And from today, maybe it's a say that we've been told as this is the coral coast. But really what hurts us is the say that has come across the coral coast that we've been told that now it's been an algae coast with corals, with the restoration of corals. Now it's one of the priorities in our district that we are working on, because with corals, with understanding that coral and the coral in the oceans and the reef itself, it's like a seawall. So it has a very unique color itself that attracts tourism. So with that coral restoration project, we are now working on that to help our village, our coral coast, and also the front of all the hotels, because we are looking into spearheading this project so that it gives more income to tourism itself. So these are some of the efforts and the initiatives done by the community itself. So to tell you that we've been working and we've been looking and looking for resolutions and solutions that to try and build and ensure and protect the loving environment that we've been given. And also we've also engaged with other stakeholders in requesting them to come and do consultation and awareness so that we can help our community to better understand the best practices and ways to lead a new generation to a better life. So for our understanding today that we do hope that with this message, we can maybe ask or request our friends or NGOs or other partners or stakeholders, if we can come and stand together and build the coral coast to a much more fascinating area, so that we can get more tourism attractive for Fiji to understand that we as Fijians, as Itauke, we are very attractive and we are very flexible in adapting into the changes. And we hope that with the plans to come, looking into the theories of change, we hope that we will work together for creating a new coral coast for Fiji. Vinaka.
Indeed, a key word being highlighted there about the need to adapt to the issue at hand. Also, we must also acknowledge, I take my hat off to some of the initiatives that have been so far implemented in some of the villages, for example, the coral planting initiative. Also, the need to maintain the beauty of the coral coast, something that this area is renowned for. Also, the coral planting initiative might not only protect these coastal villages, but it might also set a benchmark to other coastal communities who can follow suit.
What's your plan? Are you ready to leave your home? Plan now before disaster strikes. Pacific Prepared.
And that was an interview I did earlier on with the Tuindabutukia, or Tuindabutukia, Ratukini Biliame, Rabono Luambu Robato, right here on Pacific Prepared. Coming to an end of another episode of Pacific Prepared. Thank you so much for listening in. And as I've mentioned early on, that we're always delighted to have someone who have been part of our journey to be with us on any episode. For example, this week's episode, having Jeremy Guo on the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for listening to another episode of Pacific Prepared. And thanks, Joe. I really appreciate your help. And Jeremy, it's
all
been
good
to see you on the other end of the phone as well this week, or the screen as it might be. So thank you for joining us this week.
Thank you, Thomas Fred. Thank you, Thomas Joe. Like in Palau, they said, Mesulang.
Vinaka.
Vinaka. Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Jeremy.
Pacific Prepared.
This show was made on the lands of the peoples of Stony Creek Nation in Lutruwita, Tasmania. Also the people of the Vanua Uviti. Pacific Prepared is supported with funding from the Australian Government's Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. Any views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the Australian Government. It's produced and distributed in partnership with Radio Australia and networks across the Pacific, including Radio New Zealand Pacific, National Broadcasting Corporation of Papua New Guinea, Palau Wave Radio, Fijian Broadcasting Corporation, Samoa National Radio 2AP, Solomon Islands Broadcasting Corporation, and Tonga Broadcasting Commission. My name's Fred Hooper, and thanks to my co-host in Fiji, Josiah Nanunga. Please share any information you've learned today, and stay safe. This has been Pacific Prepared.